Hello everyone and welcome to the Retro Asylum, the UK's number one retro gaming podcast show. The Game Club is back.
We're back.
And I'm back with Mads. Hi. Hello mate.
Hi Chris.
How's it going?
Fine mate, thanks. How about you?
Yeah, it's back. Game
yes.
Club's back.
Finally, it's been, it always feels like forever when we do these summer RPGs where it's 2 months of playing one game and you and I don't get to chat as much as we normally do. So yeah, I'm glad to be back.
It always feels, because going into August feels like almost like the start of summer, even though it's not, because it's the end of summer in some ways. But the whole, well, in the UK anyway, the kids have usually just finished school. So the whole summer holiday stretching out in front of you. When we get to the end of September, feels like Christmas is around the corner. So
yeah.
It is always feels like a very long stretch.
So in Denmark, summer holidays start on in the beginning of July. So beginning of August
totally
would be last week of our holidays, yeah. For example.
Yeah. Yeah, and then the final embers of the summer then for
yep,
the rest
yep.
of August.
But I mean, with the summer we've had, it feels like it's still summer. I was sitting outside outside the cottage drinking my beer in just my shirt this morning, for example. So,
well, look at you. So what temperature would that be? About 12 degrees then? That's summer
16,
for you guys, isn't
I think.
It?
17. It was good.
Pleasant.
Yeah.
We've had a ground frost on the car the past few days.
Really?
Yeah,
okay.
Very thin, first thing in the morning, yeah, very thin layer of frost.
Nothing like that here yet. We haven't even turned the heating on, so.
Very good.
Yeah.
So that's the weather report finished.
That's the weather report, yes, yes. That's what you need
that's
to
it.
Have
we'll
when two
now.
Middle-aged men are sitting chatting about what they've been doing. You need the
weather
report. What else? Any ailments? Do you have any pains, Chris?
I do have a dodgy knee at the moment,
okay,
actually,
okay.
But I could talk a long time about my dodgy knee, but Let's steer away from being boring middle-aged men.
That's hard to do. But yeah, let's talk some gaming instead.
Talk to me about Planescape, mate. How are you getting on with it?
So I haven't had that much time for it recently because I have this handicap that I can't play it at the cottage, which is where I have time to play games because of the missing cloud sync functionality on the good old games version I have.
Yeah.
But I've really been enjoying it. I'm still trying to satisfy all the sensates. We'll probably talk about that when we record. Just about to enter the lower ward, I think. Yeah, it's a great game. I'm playing it as a fighter, killing everything I see. But more on that on the next episode.
Yeah, for sure. See, I was thinking we're going to do a little bit of production chat live on air here, but I was thinking that it'd be quite cool to do the main episode as we would usually when we're on form and to time around the end of this month, start of next month.
Yes.
And then do like a supplemental bulletin when we've both finished it just to wrap up on what we thought of the end and closing thoughts. I don't know what you think about that.
Yeah, all good by me if I can find the time to get through it. How many hours do I need?
So I reckon from where you are now, I would say you're probably halfway.
Yep. Okay.
Maybe a bit more. Again, it depends. I mean, you could spend dozens of hours wandering around doing every single side quest around the wards, because there's a couple of wards. You're in the low ward now, right?
Yeah.
And then there's the Clark's ward, which is like the higher echelons of society. And then I won't spoil where you go from there, because that's when the plot does kick in. What I would say is you're kind of like around the midpoint in the game. Once you get past the next major plot point. Because you're probably... I won't say that because I don't want to spoil it. Once you get past the next major plot point, the game becomes really linear.
Okay.
It hasn't been so far.
I think I have like 20 missions open for me right now. I'm doing all kinds of... I like that. If I have the time, I love doing all of the side quests. So that's what I'm running around doing instead of moving the main narrative right now.
Yeah. So I was thinking if we do it like that and we talk, because even now you'll have seen more than enough of the game systems to talk about, you know, how the quests work and how the combat system works and the dialogue, etc. So if we do it on a kind of non-spoiler basis for the end of the game and then come back and do a bit of a spoiler chat, it means that then you can just finish the game at your own leisure. And even if that ends up being in December, we come back on and say, oh, let's talk about the end.
This is a game I want to finish, so it works for me, mate.
Yeah. Yeah, it's well worth doing.
Yeah.
And of course, you've been distracted a little bit with another major release.
I have. And what a distraction it's been. I mean, Return to Monkey Island is out. It feels like we were just talking about this because we were just talking about this on Playthrough Podcast 2 days ago. So, man, that game, it is a beauty. It's everything I wanted it to be and more. Today I've had a few hours to play it today, and it's a long game as well, for my money at least. I think I've spent many hours on it already, and I felt that this is probably about the end, and then a whole new chapter opens up, and I'm sure a lot more is about to happen. But no, this is brilliant, mate. It's the sound design, the music is so good. It's like they're back on form using the iMuse system, so it kind of the themes change a bit when you enter new locales, and the graphics. I mean, the background graphics are just jaw-droppingly beautiful. It's gorgeous, even the sprites, which I those paper cutout sprites, I liked them. I didn't love them initially, but they've really grown on me. I really like them now. So everything just works, and that paired with a beautiful control scheme. It's a great way of playing a point-and-click adventure without pointing and clicking, because I'm actually playing it on the Switch with a controller in hand, watching either the beautiful screen on the OLED Switch or my huge television set downstairs. It just works. It's a great way of playing this game, and it's bringing new people into the genre as well. Because my oldest daughter, who normally doesn't care about the point and click adventures, I've really been trying to get her to play those for a long time. She's picked it up and is loving it, because this is just a lot more accessible for her.
And we were just talking in the old virtual green room, weren't we, about this? But it's really cool that someone who's a completely different generation to us, you know, with no nostalgia for the genre, the series, former games, she can just pick it up and start playing and enjoy it. And that it says something about just how good the game is, that you wax lyrical, I'll wax lyrical, and hopefully your daughter will wax lyrical as well when she's played through it. So it feels like not just Monkey Island for us, it feels like a Monkey Island for everyone.
See, that's what I'm hoping. I'm hoping that younger gamers will pick this up and will love the series, and that will mean that they'll make lots and lots more, because now they've got a really nice game engine that they can build even more narratives for us on, and that hopefully that will make us see a few more Monkey Island games from Ron and Dave.
It's really interesting, actually. I was reading an interview with Dave Grossman before it released, and he was talking about the fact that the one thing he regretted, and he revealed, it wasn't a spoiler, that Elaine doesn't have a huge pivotal role to play in this game. And he was saying one of the things they regretted was that she wasn't quite as prominent as they would have liked her to have been.
Okay.
And he hinted at possibly doing something in future which would revolve around Elaine and making Elaine Marley the central character, and how some of the systems might need to change, you know, because she would solve puzzles in different ways. I love that, because her character has
become more and more interesting. I mean, in the first game, her character isn't that interesting, but already from the second
one. No, she's the MacGuffin, isn't she?
Yeah. But already from the second game, and especially the third and fifth game, she's got a hugely important role, and she's got such charisma. I'd love to play her.
And actually, she is my
favorite sprite. Talking about the new sprites, she looks so good in this new style. I love that.
I mean, as you say, I mean, I don't think I really had an opinion, too much of an opinion on it. I think it was just there, and obviously I'd seen the screenshot and seen the videos. But the one thing that really grabs me is the animation as well. Just how wonderfully each screen is animated. Now, if you just linger on some of the screens, you'll start to see that worms will crawl out from beneath the carpet, and
people are moving behind like windows, and
just little bits of detail which don't need to be there, but it just makes the whole thing just seem so warm and alive. And the color palette is incredible. And and the other thing I love as well is you're not just given the opportunities to examine something or pick up something or talk to. They're all context specific, so that you'll go to one of the hotspots. Let's say I don't want to spoil anything for anyone. In one of the areas, there's a rat, and you get, he doesn't say examine the rat. He'll say something like, comment on the cheeky looking rat.
Yes, exactly. Or you've always got,
it'll be marvel at the painting.
Yeah, exactly.
It's lovely.
And those little context hints become part of the narrative as well. I love that. And you've always got,
yeah, because they change,
one or two actions. That's all you have with an interaction point. Yeah. Where one would actually, if you didn't do these little context sensitive things, it would just be look at, and the other one would be interact or pick up. By changing the little sentences that are put on there, it just adds so much to the game.
Yeah, you wouldn't think, but you're just changing the verb from examine to comment on. Yeah, it's just the little touches like that.
It's David Rund's humor there as well, because it's often I laugh before I even push any of the choices, because the choices are funny. So it's great.
This is a real step up from Thimbleweed Park as well for me, and I wonder how much of that is to do with Dave Grossman. And I know there's a load of other people who work on this who didn't work on Thimbleweed.
Yeah.
But I thought Thimbleweed Park was sometimes a little bit too self-referential, and it's a little bit too clever and too knowing. You kind of got the impression that it was, you're almost kind of, you know, you're either in Ron Gilbert's gang and get all the jokes, or you're not. And in that sense, it felt a little bit too cool for school at some points. I still really enjoyed it. Whereas Monkey Island just feels so fresh and vibrant, and it was more than, it feels like it's more than we could ever have hoped for in a reboot, sequel, call it what you will.
Agreed. I liked Thimbleweed Park. It's a good game.
I did as well.
I already prefer this by a long shot. I mean, this is so much better.
Yeah.
This is so much better.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it feels like they've crazily taken so many more risks with this game than they did with Thimbleweed.
It's really good. And there are many nods to older Monkey Island games, of course, many references. Not so many. I'm sure that my daughter isn't going to enjoy it any less because she doesn't get those references, because it's funny on its own as well. But I also like there are other references that they are so subtle that it's only the nerds like us that will actually pick them up. So I'm not going to ruin anything for you, but there is a Zach McCracken reference, of course, because David B. Fox was working on this he did most of the programming, I think, of the actual game. I guess Ron is probably the engine programmer, because he loves making engines. But David B. Fox, who made, of course, Zach McCracken back in the day, he's put some little stuff in there as well. So there's a reference to Zach McCracken. So tell me when you find that.
Okay, I'll let you know. And if I get to the end of the game and I've not seen it, I'll say, where was that reference that I missed?
Exactly. Subtle references here and there. I love that.
Yeah. So anything else that you've been up to that you want to mention?
Playing Vanquish. What a great game. But we just talked about that 2 days ago on the Playthrough podcast. So if you're interested
a middle-aged game now.
Yes. So if you're interested in your middle-aged games and you like some shooty bang bang, this is great action. And it's action. I love this game because this is a game where I can feel myself getting better for every 10 minutes I sit with a controller in hand. Yeah. And it's got a control scheme that's actually somewhat convoluted. There are many moves and a lot you need to control. But whenever I get, there's only like 5-10 minutes between each checkpoint. And whenever I get through a checkpoint without dying once, I feel a sense of accomplishment. Especially if there was a boss fight in there. And I've just played it yesterday. I had a few good big boss fights, even creatures that I met for the first time. And I got them without dying. And that's such a great feeling. So I'm loving playing.
You just feel like you're getting to that point where you're starting to get a small mastery of the systems
Exactly.
You can take on different enemies and intuitively know how to take them down.
Yeah, and that just feels great. I'm loving playing Vanquish. I'm only playing it on normal mode, but if I have the time, I'll definitely go back and play this on hard, because, man, this is good fun.
Yeah, it's really funny, isn't it? Because we recorded our first of two episodes on Vanquish over on Playthrough, by the way, playthroughpod.com, or look us up on your podcast app of choice. Mads, me, Jim Middleton, and Andy Gilmore over there. It's funny, we went into that first episode of Vanquish and I thought to myself, Mads clearly loves this game, but the rest of us seem lukewarm at best. I think the conversation took us all on a bit of, I hate this word in this context, took us all on a bit of an emotional journey, where in the end I think it was all quite cathartic, wasn't it? I think in the end we all got to the point where we wanted to get back to it, and it's like, this is good. And it's us that have been bad and we've been playing it wrong. And now when we get back to it, we're going to have a much better idea on how to make this work. I've not been back to it yet since we recorded, but I'm probably going to have a go this evening.
It's close to the perfect action game to my mind. There's one design flaw that Andy put so well, that it's weird that you're being punished for the melee combat. Because there is, you can only take out one enemy with a hit or a kick, and then you'll deplete your energy meter. And that leaves you in a very, very vulnerable state. Would have been so nice if it actually would have rewarded you instead for that.
Yeah, yeah.
So you rush into combat, kick an enemy over, and then be ready to fight instead of actually be dead on your feet because you're caught in the middle of the fire.
Yeah, it's almost like a move of last resort, isn't it?
Exactly.
If you're melee and someone, you're in trouble straight away.
That's the only thing I find is a bit of a shame for the controls. Apart from that, it's beautiful, beautiful carnage.
Yeah. Well, there we go. So if you want to hear more about that, middle-aged game, almost retro, Dean Swain, is it? No.
No.
PS3, never. Never in this parish would we call a PS3 game retro. But it's getting there, I think. Yeah, it's a lovely game, and you can hear us talking more about that over on Playthrough. I've just been to EGX, so this has been the last day of EGX. It's Sunday, the 25th of September. I spent the Friday with Jim of Playthrough at EGX. Retro stuff. So it was really nice. There was probably about 24 arcade cabs, original arcade cabs, really nice. So, and we're not talking about modern redesigns here, original cabs, CRT screens, really, really good stuff. A couple of them weren't working, but there was a sit-down Outrun,
nice.
Which was really nice. And there was a 1942 cab. So we obviously had 1942 as a high score challenge in August on Discord. I jumped on 1942 and managed to crack my second highest score that I've ever had on 1942, which I was pretty pleased with. But then at the back, they had a setup of retro consoles and computers. Now, outward, as you walk towards this area, you see this sign saying franchise celebrations, it said. Franchise celebrations. And they had a load of consoles set up with flat screens, LCD screens.
Oh, God.
With the original consoles plugged into them. But, widescreen. They were all widescreen. And I thought to myself, this is an abomination. Why would you even bother having these out if you're going to display them like that? They had an NES running Mario 3 in widescreen.
Oh, God.
It looked and the fact they called it franchise celebrations, I was like, what is this? So I took a bit of a sniffy picture and posted it on Twitter saying, look at the retro section. It's terrible. To be fair, it did redeem itself, because as you walk beyond that, you then got into a square area, which did say kind of retro. It said sort of retro section.
Mm.
And it did have some computers and some consoles, and they had some CRTs. They weren't all being played on CRTs, but they did have some.
Mm.
So it did, I then took a second picture and said, look, to be fair, it's not quite as bad as I first feared. But I do wonder sometimes why these big shows even bother. I mean, the retro scene is more than well catered for with various events. I think Play Expo was this weekend as well. So sometimes I think if you're not going to do it properly, just don't even bother. Just get a load of misters and plug them in, couldn't you? And then just be done with it.
Yep, probably.
That would be the first
mention of the mister.
Here we go. Take a drink, everyone.
Yes.
Try and keep it to a minimum, although it has influenced the choice of theme for next month. The other thing I've been doing, other than Planescape and Monkey Island, is Final Fantasy II is our current community playthrough game.
Yeah. Is it good?
The NES. Oh, is it good? Is it good? I don't really know.
Okay.
About 12 hours into it, maybe a bit more. As part of it, that's good. And it is always nice to know that you're playing the history of what is my favourite, probably, video game series of all time. So it's nice to know you're playing those formative entries. But Jesus Christ, I mean, this system of powering up by repeating your actions is, it's the kind of thing that really only a mother could love.
Okay.
I think. I mean, there is some good about it. So, to improve your strength, you improve your strength by doing it. It makes sense. So, the more you attack, the stronger you get. Makes sense. But it starts to fall down a little bit. Because the way you power up your spells is that you use them. So the more you use them, the more powerful they get. Now, that would make sense if all the spells were open to you from the start.
Mm.
Or there was some way that the level of the spells scaled when you collect them. I mean, for instance, I've got 3 or 4 really powerful, well, mid-level now magic spells. But I've just picked up a new elemental spell, which is level 1.
So you need to level that up by itself?
And the only way you can level it up is by using it. So you have to use it 50 times to get new level.
Well, and it sounds very grindy.
My choices are I can use a level which will do... I can use a spell which will probably do about 150 damage. Or I can use a spell which will give me 20 damage. But where I am in the game now, in mid-level monsters, which have about 250 hit points.
Okay.
So you can see how grindy it will get.
Yeah.
To increase your hit points, you've got to take damage.
Mm.
So you end up attacking your own party members because you want them to take damage to increase their HP.
Yeah. Sounds like a flaw in the system, if you ask me.
It's one of those things that I think they threw a lot on... The old cliche where they threw a lot at the wall with Final Fantasy II.
Yeah.
Some of it stuck. You know, chocobos for the first time. There's a Cid with an airship. But a lot of it didn't work, and they abandoned in future. It's kind of like that Zelda 2, Castlevania 2, difficult second child syndrome.
Mm.
But there is stuff to like, and I am going to power on through. I think there's only a couple of us. There's John Shep as well who's playing it. What we must do before the end of the year is almost like have a anniversary wrap-up of the community playthrough and look back on some of the games that we've played in the first year.
Yeah,
because
that'd be
good. The second year is going to be absolutely stonking, I think. There's some great titles coming up in the second year.
Yeah.
We must do that. Should we get on with it, mate?
Let's.
The main event.
So for this next month in the Game Club, we thought we just played an RPG and King Thrulio has been keeping the arcade lights on as well on the forums, on Discord forums. They've been playing Kix and what was the first, 1942 for arcade high score challenges. So we didn't want to go arcade. We didn't want to go RPG. But somebody has just gotten their hands on a Mister. Cheers. And wants to look at the Amiga Core, I think. So actually that was your choice, an Amiga platformer. A platformer that's where the Amiga was the main platform. So we're talking single bottom, up to jump. That's right, King Trio. No, not King Trio, that was King Kong Groover. You'll need to press up to jump.
No,
but
none of that remapping nonsense.
No, none of that. Up to jump, on a stick, it'll be good. An Amiga platformer. See, I haven't actually played or spent real time with an Amiga platformer in years, so I'm glad you picked this, mate. It seems as if, as the years have gone by and we have our access to all of these many, many machines and ROMs for all of the different systems, Amiga platformers is not something you go back to because of that single button up to jump control scheme, but I'm sure there are some hidden gems there that we're missing out on.
There's got to be.
There's got to be. So I'm really
It can't be the case that every single Amiga platformer is rubbish.
No, not at all. So we've got, we posed a question for the listeners on Discord, and we had a lot of good suggestions to which game to play. We have decided we'll read out all of your suggestions. Well, almost all of them. One of you gave us like 13 or 14 different games to choose from. So you know who you are, Namcos. But we'll read out all of the other ones, at least, and some of yours as well, Namcos, of course. And then Chris and I will add a game ourselves as well. And then we'll whittle down that extremely long list to find just the 3 or 4 that we'll be voting for. Yeah. So, Chris, without further ado, are you ready?
I'm ready.
You are ready. Okay, so let's see. I'm just going to read these out briefly now so we get the titles, and then we can talk a bit about the different titles suggested. So, do you know which one you're going to add to the list already?
Yeah.
Let's start with that.
Am I only allowed to add one?
Well, you can add two if you want. It'll just be whittled down, of course. But
No, okay. I'll only have one because, it's one that I really... Oh, God, there's a couple. No, I'll only have one.
Let's hear it then. Let's hear it.
Okay, so my one is PP Hammer and his pneumatic drill.
Yes.
Did you play this one?
I think I did. I know the title, but I can't really see it for me right now. So,
you know, I thought it was a PD title, but I don't think it was. It was published by Demonware.
Okay.
Shall I just say the name for now and then we can have a chat about it later, or do you want me to talk a little bit more? Okay, so it's PP Hammer and is the wonderfully named and his pneumatic weapon.
Okay. So I'll add mine as well to the list before we go through all of the listener suggestions. Tearaway Thomas. It's a game I've always loved. So I'll still love that if I pick it up today. Okay, yeah. Here we go. We've got lots of games to go through. Top Hat Willy. Ever heard about that?
No, but I've looked it up since Morphin mentioned it. Yep.
Yep. We've got McDonaldland or MC Kids. Yeah. I think it's called McDonaldland on the Amiga, right?
It's MC Kids on the NES, wasn't it? McDonaldland on the Amiga.
Yep. There's First Samurai. Mm. And that's a good one as well. What was it? Rafael Seco, who made that one by himself.
Yep. Yep.
Harlequin, Soccer Kid, Parasol Stars, Fire and Ice, Traps and Treasures, Lionheart, Rough and Tumble, and Flimbo's Quest. And then we got Namco's huge list. And should we just go through that, you and I, to pick the games that we will think about?
Yeah.
Let's see. The bottom two are Sewell and Sewell 2. I'm going to eliminate those already because... Toki is an arcade game, so let's get away with that. Rotland is a single screen platform, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's also an arcade port.
Mm, yeah. So now we've still got a lot of good ones here, yeah?
EUGH. UGH. Ugh. So that was more of a flying game, side-scrolling, where you had to rescue... I can't remember that being a platformer.
Okay. Then there's Bobber and Sticks, which is definitely a platformer, but more of an adventure game, really.
It's a Mega Drive game as well.
It was Amiga first and foremost, wasn't it?
Oh, was it?
Yeah, I'm sure it was. It's a core design game from the Amiga
days.
I think it's Simon Phipps, actually, who's behind this. Simon and what was the other artist called?
I can't remember his name. But we also have covered Bubba and Sticks before because we featured it on the Core Design episode as well.
We definitely did. And Bubba and Sticks is not a platformer, really. It's not about being good at platforming. It's about solving the puzzles. It's an adventure game to my mind, really. I love it, but it's probably not for this section. So let's each just pick one of his games to put forward. I'm going to pick Sleepwalker.
Okay, cool. That's very good. I loved the amount of hype around that game when it came out. It was amazing. Mm. I'm going to choose an honourable mention for Gods here, a game that I always wanted to get into back in the day, but never did. But I'm going to choose Leander.
Good choice.
Which is the first ever game by Traveller's Tales.
Okay. So lots of good games go out here, but we have Leander and Sleepwalker left from Namco's list, so... Lots of games to talk about. Let's just go through each game and just briefly say what we remember about it and if we remember anything about it, so that we know what we're talking about when we're whittling down the list. So you get to start, Chris, because you started with your PP Hammer. Tell me about PP Hammer. What's that?
Just tell you about PP Hammer. So PP Hammer is... I want to say it's a single screen, but it might not be. Now I'm talking completely from memory. Mm. Heavily inspired by Lode Runner. You have to go through each of the levels and find the treasures. I have to confess here, and it may be a reason why this does get eliminated. It is most definitely a puzzle platform game.
Okay.
Because your little guy, PP Hammer, has his drill, his pneumatic weapon. And the idea is that you have to work your way through the levels using his drill. There is a way that you can get through the levels and you have to figure out which way you need to go to get to the duels.
Okay.
And you can, you know, you can fail and then you have to start again. There are various things that will kill you if you drill through the wrong way. And then there's bonus things that you can collect as well. And, you know, and you can jump and there's locked doors and there's bonus areas and there's all the stuff that platformers do have, but it probably isn't a dyed in the wool traditional platformer. It's a very good game. It was one of the games that I got when I first got my Amiga 500. I got, you know, one of those lockable crates, those lockable disc boxes that we were all so used to that had all, you know, put your floppies in. It was one of the games that was in there. You know, different themes. The graphics are quite nice. The music's quite nice. But it is, if we're trying to find a true skill-based platformer here, this is definitely one where it's more you use your noodle more than your reflexes, put it that way.
Okay, and probably not a sport.
It's really good fun though.
Okay, so you're kind of removing yourself from the list already. That's good. Makes it easier for me, at least.
Yeah, I probably am, aren't I?
You want a do-over, mate?
Well, maybe we'll just have to have another. No. I'm going to stick with that. My other honourable mention, and I'm going to stick with PP Hammer because at least if any of our listeners have never heard of it, do check it out. If you like your puzzle platformers, do check out PP Hammer. It's a really, I really enjoyed it. It's a big game as well. I think there's about 50 levels there.
Yeah.
I got quite far on it back in the day as well. The other honourable mention I was going to add to the list was the Blues Brothers.
I used to enjoy that.
Which is a really cool film tie-in.
Yeah, cool.
I really enjoyed that. I suspect it's one of those that I suspect won't hold up very well.
But I did
really enjoy it back in the day. But no, I'll stick with PP Hammer.
Cool.
And even though I know it's going to be excluded straight away, no worries.
Let's see. So my game was Tearaway Thomas. It's from 1993, published and developed by Global Software. This is a fast-paced collectathon, really. I mean, every level you have something along the lines of 15 to 30 seconds, that's all. And you need to collect N diamonds. And when you have enough diamonds, the exit will open and you can exit the level.
Yeah.
There'll always be 3 to 5 extra diamonds that you can fetch. If you get those, you'll get a bonus as well. And sometimes, if I do recall correctly, there'll be some bonus stages that you enter then. But it's all about speed. And the only thing you can do is run and jump. And jump is actually on the button and not up to jump in this game.
Because there's no attack. That's all
you need. You just need to run and jump. And if you hold down, if I recall correctly, a lot of the enemies, if you hold down the button that jumps, you can jump on the head of a bear, for example, without getting hurt.
Mm.
And nothing can kill you as such. But when you hit like a bird or a bee or something like that, or a bear, you will sit down, you'll be dazed for 2 seconds.
Okay.
And that will be a huge punishment in itself, because this is a game where you are in a hurry. The diamonds are placed on the level so that if you do the level perfectly with the jumps on the right places and you catch the ropes that you can swing and everything there, it's easy. You have this path through and you get everything. But if you make a mistake, you're going to be scrambling to get it. And it's just such great fun. It's definitely a skill-based game, and you learn your patterns through the levels, and it rewards fast reflexes. And it's everything, for my money, that the Sonic should have been, but wasn't.
I was thinking when you were describing it that it does sound awfully like Sonic.
It does. But that's...
In some ways.
That's Tearaway Thomas. I loved that back in the day.
Would you be happy to revisit it, or is it a game that you feel like you've played too much to go back to?
No, I'd be happy to actually try to finish it. I've never finished it. I've went back to it many times. And maybe this is just too hard for me to finish, because some of these games, as we know, were devilishly hard. So nobody ever saw the finish line of these. And I don't remember if there's any... I don't think there's any continue possibilities, really. But I'd love to go back to that.
Oh, a password system?
I don't think so. But I could
blimey.
Be wrong. It's been a while since I played it. Another game I could have chosen actually was Carve Up. I love that.
Yeah,
talking about the
game.
Core design. But we played that on the Core design episode, I think.
So. Yeah. It feels like a game we've talked a lot about, but it's a great game.
Yeah, wonderful game.
Yeah.
So
Tearaway Thomas sounds really good. I'd never heard of Teraway Thomas until you, I can't remember hearing about it until I met you, really, and you've mentioned it a few times.
Yeah,
I've certainly never played it.
So I'm very surprised to see that it was released in 1993. I was certain it was older than that, but yeah, I've played it a lot, even though I got my PC in 1993. So yeah, must have only been a few months that I was playing it. I kept my Amiga actually for a while I had the PC, but
yeah. So it's AGA, is it, or 500?
No, it's an A500, an ECS game, I'm sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
That sounds interesting. Very interesting, actually. I like the sound of that.
Yep. I never had a
should we have a look at the next one?
Amiga back in the day. So moving on to the listener choices. Let's start with Morpin's choice, which was Top Hat Willy, which is a public domain game, I think. It was created by, I would guess, these are brothers, Petri and Tero. Tero Häkkinen is the programmer, does the graphics, sound and music, everything. And then Petri would be helping with the sprite graphics and design, it seems. So these two guys made a game in their spare time, is what I'm guessing happened here. It's released at the end of 1994, so it's kind of a modern Amiga game, I guess. Very last legs of the Amiga. It doesn't look like an Amiga game, does it? I mean, looking at the graphics.
No, it looks like Jet Set Willy.
It does look like an 8-bit game. But according to Morpin, it's a really good game. And it's quite hard, if I do recall correctly. That was what he mentioned. But very...
It's an homage to Jet Set Willy, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yep.
And it looks like a specky game, but with a bit more colour.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And a lot less clashing.
I love the Manic Miner Jet Set Willy games. I really do. And it's not one that I'd heard of, and it's one that I would like to play. But I think if we've got 1 month where we're going to try and celebrate at an Amiga platformer, it feels like, and it's the reason why I didn't pick Exelon from Namco's list. It feels like it's not what you would choose. Or if you wanted to get people around your computer and say, check this out, you know, this is a great Amiga platformer, I'm not sure you'd choose an homage to Jet Set Willy.
Okay.
With all due respect to Jet Set Willy. What do you think?
You might be right. Let's see when we whittle down the list. I think it looks interesting. It looks like something I need to check out now that Morpin's mentioned it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, next up then, McDonald Land.
Yes, this was Raushi who suggested this one.
Raushi's pick. Hmm. Yeah, I played this back in the day, did you? It's interesting.
I actually didn't. I don't think I've ever played this.
Whether you're the age I was, probably anything that was branded McDonald's, I would have lapped up. But I think a lot of people turn their nose up to it because they assume it's just going to be a cheap tie-in. But my recollection is that it's not. Have you got the data there of who?
Yeah, it's programmed by one guy, Derek Owens. It's published and developed by Virgin Games. It's programmed by Derek Owens, and the graphics are by John Harrison.
But speaking from memory only, it's got some really interesting mechanics. I seem to remember there was one where the screen went upside down and it changed the way you had to get through the levels, and there's various theme levels, which each one has got a... I think there's someone, you know, there was like a... remember the Hamburglar from the old McDonald adverts back in the day? You don't hear of him anymore. And obviously Ronald McDonald is there on one of the levels, and it's colourful and bright, and it's a much better game than it deserves to be.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. I've never played it myself. It says here the game features 7 different worlds with over 30 main levels, so it's
kind of a huge game.
Yeah, but these tie-in games, they could actually be good sometimes. I mean, I loved Cool Spot on the Amiga as well.
Yeah, it was a good game. Mm. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that is another game that is so much better than it has any right to be.
Yes, yes.
But they're just games that, surprisingly, are just really well-coded and really well-designed. Reservations, you know, it is a port of an NES game. So, you know, again, are we, you know, is it going against what we really set out to do this month? I don't know, but... it's definitely an interesting one, and I think one that would raise some eyebrows from people who don't know about it, that we were covering it.
Yeah.
Could be good.
Could be good. The next choice was First Samurai. That was Riz or King Kong Gruber who suggested that one. Have you ever played First Samurai? The classic Raphael Sacco game?
I didn't really like it back in the day.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's very famous Amiga yes. game, isn't it?
Mm.
I tried a few times to play it. I actually played the second one, Second Samurai, more. I did never really get into it, despite trying a few times. And I seem to remember finding the controls a bit sluggish and like that. It's the problem with quite a few Amiga platformers, actually, looking yep. at you gods. You know, it feels a bit clunky. Did you like it?
No, I'm exactly the same as you, mate. I remember trying to play it a few times, only giving it 5 minutes and then moving on. I would actually like to dive in and see what's there, because it's a beautiful game. It's one of those really beautiful Amiga Euro platforms. Really, it definitely has the look and feel of a Euro platformer, and they can be quite beautiful, like Lionheart, which we're going to be talking about later.
But yeah.
I had problems with the controls as well, I'm sure, and that's probably why I didn't stick with it.
Don't quite know what it wants to be. You know, what does it want to be? Because he's not nimble enough to be a something like what you've just been talking about there with Tearaway Thomas, or you know, some of the more prominent console platformers. But it doesn't move slickly enough to be something like a Strider or something like a hack and slash either.
Very, very few Amiga platformers did, mate.
No, this is true. But at least the games that tried to emulate
yep.
the likes of Mario and Sonic at least tried.
Mm.
This doesn't feel like it's trying to be something like that, but I don't quite know what it wants to be either.
We have a few on the list here that actually succeeds in being just as responsive and controllable as their 16-bit consoles.
Believe you.
Tearaway Thomas, Rough and Tumble, and probably, what else did I see around here? Parasol Stars is just as good as well. So these games, at least, will be just as responsive and good to control.
Yeah, well, I hope so. I mean, that's what I'd like to find.
Yep.
Even though I did bring a puzzle platformer to the mix, but I you know, if we're gonna go down the road of trying to find, you know, a really true good, you're talking good, a yep. really good, not just good for the Amiga, a good platform game, then let's wait until we. I've got doubts about First Samurai.
Okay, fair enough. Next game is Harlequin. So Harlequin is a game I never played back in the day. I've played it 5-10 minutes just a few years ago, because our old host, Paul Driscoll, he loves Harlequin, and he always talks about it. So I fired it up, and to me, it just felt like any other Euro platformer that didn't really do anything for me. But I'd love to see what's actually there, because a lot of people praise Harlequin. It was Dr. No Vocal Cords who suggested this one. Mm. And Harlequin was published by Gremlin, of course, but developed by the Warp Factory, programmed by Andy Finlay, and the graphics are by Ed Campbell. So just a two-man team, and it's definitely a beautiful game, looking at the screenshots and remembering what I've played.
Big sprites.
But it has that, what we just talked about, the controls are slightly floaty and annoying. So that's why I never really enjoyed playing it myself.
Yeah, it's certainly got something. I looked at it. You remember we did that Gremlin graphics episode? Mm. God, yeah, three years ago, probably maybe even 4 years ago now. I had a very quick look at it then. And because Paul Monahan is another one of our former hosts who really, really likes this game as well.
Yeah.
So, and I value both Paul's.
Yes.
Paul Driscoll and Paul Monahan's opinion on these things. So I kind of think there must be something there. I don't think I played it for long enough to really see what that was. People talk about the variety, you know, from world to world. There's a lot of different themes and it changes up the gameplay.
Mm. Okay.
But I must say in my brief time with it, yeah, like you, it just felt like another one of those typical Euro platformers that you think, why am I playing this when I could be playing something else?
Yes, especially at this day and age. I mean, this is a game that, I mean, for people who actually think that Robocard is a good game, maybe they'd like this, but I loved RoboCop, and I played it a lot back in the day, but I can see now objectively that it's a horrible game. It's so boring.
No, it's not.
This is just has the same feel for me.
No one mentioned RoboCop. Really surprises me.
No, that's because it's a crap game, mate. James Pond 1, though. James Pond 1 is a great game.
Yeah.
Okay, on to the next one. Soccer Kid. This was Monster Hyde who suggested that.
Yeah.
Did you ever play Soccer Kid?
Oh, I was obsessed with the idea of Soccer Kid.
Yeah, yeah.
So, because I was football mad, Amiga mad, and football game mad. So, giving me a football game in a different context and a different genre was just manna from heaven back in the 90s. I loved the idea of it and spent a lot of time with it. But it is just so difficult.
Yes. See, that's my experience with it as well. I wanted to love this game because I loved the fact, I'm not football mad at all, but I loved the fact that it was a completely different mechanic here. So for people who don't know, you are this little kid with a soccer ball, a football, and you need to kill your enemies and solve puzzles by shooting your ball at them. So you need to control the ball. And this ball, I mean, you can be dribbling along, and then if you turn to the other side, you'll lose the ball, of course, because you need to keep it at your foot. You can shoot it in three different strengths or directions or something like that. And sometimes you need to shoot it, run somewhere and catch it and then keep on playing. Yeah. And it's hard. It's a damn hard game to play. But
yeah, and he does little keepy ups, doesn't he? And
yeah, he does.
You can flick it up and head to the ball.
And the animation, especially the sprite animation, is just so good in this game. His
graphics are amazing, actually.
It's really, really nice. But it's so hard. I mean, I've probably never been past the third level.
it is so difficult.
This is a game we need for the game club. This is a game we need to use a month trying to learn how to get through these levels, because this is a mechanic that once mastered could be really, really good fun to play with.
Yeah, I mean, the reviews were stellar. You know, just looking down the list of some of these reviews, you know, mainly high 80s, low 90s. So maybe it is a perfect game club game that we'd have to really, you know, get good at and see what it's got to offer. The game's got so much charm in the graphics and the animation, and depending on what world you're in, it's got different backgrounds, and the music's by Matt Furness, a great composer. It's got an absolute ton of pedigree.
So it's a Chrysalis game. But it's got programming by Peter Harrap. He was Gremlin, wasn't he?
Sean Hollingworth, so they were. Yeah. He was ex-Gremlin as well.
Yeah, okay. And then, it's quite a late game. It's released in 1994. I remember playing this on the Amiga at a friend's house because in 94, I'm sure I didn't have my Amiga anymore, but I did have the DOS version. And I have some very specific memories of the DOS version because I hated that bloody game. I couldn't get it to load because of the 640 kilobyte RAM limitation that we had in DOS. So you had to tailor make your config sys and your auto exec bat files to only load the stuff that you needed and load it into high memory and all this. This was one of the games that had to have 612K free of the main memory. So I have spent so many hours trying to get that game to run. And when I finally got it to run, I couldn't control it and I quit.
Would have been best
a DOS gamer back in the day, eh?
You would have got it running and then just rage quit anyway, I suspect.
Yeah, probably.
You know, it did get a 3DO port.
I would love to spend some
more
time with Soccer Kid. That's another great suggestion.
It got a 3DO port, which I didn't know.
Yeah.
Weird. Yeah, and it was ported to 3DO by Team 17.
Well, I didn't know. Okay. Hmm. It's actually, just looking at the release list here, it's for 3DO, CD32, DOS, Game Boy Advance, Jaguar, PlayStation. Yeah, PlayStation, Super Nintendo, and for Windows as well, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. It's an interesting one.
Yeah, definitely. We have another suggestion from Dr. No Vocal Cords that I love this game, but I'm going to eliminate already, and that's Parasol Stars. Because it's, for me, first and foremost, a PC Engine game. I'm sure that was the main platform. And also because it's a single screen platform, I think we should have been more specific, because what we were looking at were these Euro platformers, these scrolling platformers for the Amiga, right?
Yeah, so, I think that's what we're good with. It's what we're trying to get, isn't it?
Yeah. So while I love Parasol Stars and it hurts me, I'm going to eliminate that already. The next game is something that Phoenix Z80 suggested, and that's none other than the Bray Brooks masterpiece, Fire and Ice.
Yeah.
So how do you feel about Fire and Ice, mate?
Loved this game back in the day.
Yeah?
Absolutely loved it. I mean, this is a real graphical powerhouse for me.
Oh, yeah.
1992 release, but it looks like an AGA game. Yeah. And I still think it looks really pretty now. I'm just looking at a couple of screenshots of it. Just a really, really nice looking game. I really enjoyed it back in the day. I think I remember getting pretty far into it as well. I don't think I ever finished it, but my recollection was it was a little bit friendlier than Soccer Kid, and you could make some progress with it.
As with most other of these Euro platformers, with the floaty controls that let it down.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I mean,
especially
it looks
the
like
ice levels are infuriating.
Yeah, I remember that
slipping,
with the inertia.
Around. Man.
Yeah. Yeah, I do remember distinctly slipping off many a platform to my death.
Yep. Exactly. No, but this is a perfect example of one of those Euro platformers, and a really, really beautiful one of that. So that would be great to dive into.
It looks like a 32-bit game, doesn't it?
It does. It does.
You know, it did get a CD32 release as well, which would be interesting to see.
Yeah,
what
I wonder
added.
If they updated the graphics at all, if they felt the need for that, or whether it's actually just still the old A500 graphics.
It's just whether it's just some kind of animated intro.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
no,
maybe.
It's by Graphgold, of course, because it's an Andrew Braybrook game, but it was released in 1992, so it's it's not an old game, but a tiny bit earlier than most of the other suggestions we have here.
Yeah, no, it's another one as well that got really, really good reviews. I mean, low 90s in most of the magazines.
Yeah,
it's a classic in my eyes.
It is.
If you'd have said to me, name me your favorite Amiga platformer, I would have said RoboCod, obviously.
No, you wouldn't. But because you've got
Fire and Ice wouldn't have been far from my lips.
Okay. Have you tried? And I'm just curious. RoboCod. Have you tried playing it recently? Last couple.
No.
Years?
Okay. Why would I want to do that and spoil my nostalgia for
exactly.
it?
Exactly. If you pick it up in this day and age, you'll find out that it's got no challenge. It's so easy and it's just bland and boring.
It's crazy. The little music and the idle animation.
I love that. I love the idle animation. I love that he can like extend forever and you can grab onto platforms that are 100 meters in the air. But
yeah, I love that.
I mean, there's no fun. There's the level design is so bland. Look at the RoboCop. Oh no, not RoboCop. James Pond 1 actually had level design. That's so much better. Oh well. Moving on, and away from RoboCop because
I'm not saying anything more.
So the next is actually another Roushey pick, Traps and Treasures. So Traps and Treasures is developed by Nightingale. I've got no idea what they've made apart from this. And released in 1993. It's you're this tiny pirate, I think, and it looks really interesting, really. So I know nothing about this. Do you?
No, we're useless. We're going to be useless on this.
I'm going to just read the Moby Games entry here then, because we know nothing. So it says that Captain Jeremy Flynn's crew have been kidnapped in the Caribbean, and he must venture through four large baddie-infested levels to retrieve them. Along the way, you can collect money from handily placed treasure chests, which can be spent in various shops to gain extra weaponry. Okay, that sounds interesting. Okay, so a platformer. It says there are lots of puzzles to solve along the way, so it's more similar to Gods or maybe Arabian Nights.
Yeah.
Another great Chrysalis game. I loved Arabian Nights, actually, back in the day. Than just a straight platform game. Sounds
four
really
levels,
intriguing.
Though. Four levels suggests that, I don't know, either they're really big levels or they're difficult, really difficult, maybe.
I feel
it's just a really short game.
It's somewhat of a puzzle platformer, so you'll probably be running around the same area multiple times. I mean, picking stuff
up. It does
up
sound
and
good, though,
and,
doesn't it?
Yeah. Sounds interesting to me, at least.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's, I think it's a German game?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, yeah it is.
Then Chrysalis brought it over and released it in the UK, didn't they?
Okay.
A year later.
Okay. Yeah, so that's Traps and Treasures. Never heard of that, so...
Certainly interesting.
Yeah, definitely. And we have another one from Rauchy, actually, which was, I think somebody else suggested this one as well. That's why I picked
it. Yeah, it's been mentioned a couple of times.
Yeah. So it was Lionheart. So Lionheart is a classic, of course, of Thalion Software platformer from 1992. Yet another one of those slightly slow-moving platforms, but really, really gorgeous. It's the most beautiful backgrounds you'll see in a
Euro
platformer.
Game, yeah.
And great sprite work as well. So Lionheart is a game I've played a few times. It is a platform hack and slash game like Rastan or something like that. And it becomes harder later on, so I've never finished it. And this is a game I'd like to get through at some point. But by the way, the graphics are by Henk Nyborg.
Seen that.
So definitely beautiful stuff.
Yeah, it always comes up in the classic style over substance conversation, doesn't it? Which I think is maybe a bit unfair because it's a very well-regarded game, and it was well-regarded at the time, and a lot of people who do play it say it plays really well, but it's just because it looks so pretty that people assume it's going to be a bit of a shadow of the beast and not really have any substance to it.
That's true.
I remember I had this. I remember I can picture the disc.
With a handwritten label on it?
Yes, most definitely. and unfortunately, that is the case. But it's a blooming shame that not many more people seen the original box art. Because if you've seen the art on the box...
No, I haven't.
It's absolutely beautiful. I mean, if people haven't seen it, check out the cover art of this game. It's by a guy called Dieter Rottermund. Absolutely incredible. But unfortunately, like me, probably not enough will have seen that. I don't remember ever getting into this one. Maybe I found it too difficult. I don't know, or it just didn't grab me. But yeah, certainly well reviewed and one that I'd like to check out.
So I did get a bit into this, and I've played it recently as well, a couple of years ago, and it is actually, I find it very playable. It's a good game. It's a good example of those Euro platforms. And it's definitely not a Shadow of the Beast, where I can see where you come from, thinking that this is probably style over substance, because it looks like Shadow of the Beast sometimes.
Yeah, but it does, with the backgrounds.
A lot more playable than that. So,
yeah. Definitely. Yeah, one that I'd like to check out for sure.
Yep. So here comes a heavy contender here, I think. Rough and Tumble, suggested by Phoenix at 80 as well. So Rough and Tumble is developed by Wunderkind and published by Renegade in 1994, so a late Amiga game as well. I'm only seeing it here as an Amiga release. I'm sure there was a release on the CD32 as well, but I may be wrong about that. It's this is one of the...
Never got a console port, did it?
Once again?
No console port at all.
Not that I know of.
Surprising.
This is a platformer where, I mean, apart from the single button up to jump controls, you'd be surprised. This feels very much like a console platform. It's very controllable, very fast, and good fun. It's got lots of weapons you can pick up, and it's very frantic action. I know a lot of people love this one. For some reason, it never really clicked with me. So I don't enjoy it as much as, for example, Matt Wilshire. He loves this game. But for some reason, I can see its qualities, and I can see that it's a feat to get something running this smooth and this nice on the Amiga. But I just never really enjoyed this one. Did you play it?
Again, one of those that I remember having back in the day, but don't remember getting into. I've actually checked it out more recently. I can't remember what... It might have been something Matt had said. And do you know what it reminds me of? I'm just trying to remember what it was called. There was a game on the Mega Drive by Treasure. Oh, what's it called, Matt? Where you have the two... really well known for its difficulty and its manic nature. You know, people are screaming at their car. I can't remember what it's called. There's a very famous Mega Drive game by Treasure that I, my Adeline.
I can see the blue and red sprite in front of me right now.
Yeah, exactly.
What's it that called? One. Gunstar Heroes, right?
Gunstar Heroes.
Gunstar Heroes. Hey, it came to me without Googling.
Mads has cracked it. It's Gunstar Heroes. That's what it reminds me of. And when I played it, probably, I don't know, maybe only a year ago, I didn't play it for very long because I just wanted to see what it was like. But that's the game it reminded me of. It reminded me of a European version of Gunstar Heroes. It's got that same kind of manic... It's difficult, but it feels... It felt fair, and I remember thinking, oh, you know what, I reckon I could get decent at this if I played it for long enough. Again, it's another game that looks really nice. It's a bit later, it's 1994, wasn't it? It's another game that looks really, really good. I mean, this is knocking on the door of 32-bit, I reckon.
Yeah, this is definitely a beauty. And it's not even an AGA game, if I recall correctly.
No, it's not. No, I don't think so. Yeah, this is a as you say, this is a proper heavy hitter. This a major contender.
Yep.
This is the kind of game. I only looked at it very, probably played it for about 20 minutes. But this is the kind of game when if you wanted to get your mate around, if someone who didn't really know much about 16-bit games said, "Come on, then show me what the Amiga can do. Put on a game, you know, that is fast and is action packed. Rough and Tumble would be right up there."
Yeah.
Different weapons and different levels and. Really colourful and vibrant. It's good stuff.
Yeah, indeed. And a bit of I think I actually know why I don't like it. It's big open levels where you have, it's a collectathon. Yeah. You have to collect stuff. But I know I said the same thing about Tearaway Thomas, but in Tearaway Thomas, the stuff you have to collect are arranged so that if you learn to do a perfect run, you'll do it in seconds and get onto the next level. Here, it's one of those run back and forth, push a switch, now the door opens there, now you can get back to that place again and pick stuff
up.
That's
right,
I don't enjoy that. It's the same with Sewell. I don't enjoy Sewell because of that mechanic. If Sewell would have ended the levels when you got to the end of the bloody levels, I would have liked it a lot more. But having to hunt for candy forever, it just doesn't click with me. I don't like that.
Yeah. Well, maybe you might find the same thing here because again, that is exactly what you do.
I will find the same thing. I've played this not too long ago, and that is why I don't like it. Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Okay, so you know you don't like it. Yeah, fair enough. I mean, it reminds you a little bit.
I could definitely play this. But it's not definitely not my favorite on the list. But I could play this, no worries.
Yeah. Well, let's see. Let's see what's left.
Yes. We've got Flimbo's Quest, also suggested by Roushi, I think. And some others mentioned Flimbo's Quest as well, if I do recall correctly. So Flimbo's Quest was released in 1990 and developed by Euphoria, actually programmed by a single guy, Roger... I've got no idea how to say his surname. Schutterla? I've got no idea. game designed by Lauren van der Donk. Beautiful names here. It's got music by Duran Tell, actually. Maniacs of Noise fame.
Lovely. Yeah.
So, Flimbo's Quest, I think a lot of people know this one already, don't they?
So, isn't this the one that you covered for Amiga Addict?
No, that would be Flink.
Oh, that was it, yeah.
Pink Kneeborg's beautiful game, Flink, yeah.
Yeah. That's a good sorry. One. Yeah. I don't know this at all. I don't recall it from back in the day, and I've heard of it since, but I don't know much about it at all. Someone said in Discord that it was more of a C64 game, is that right?
Yes, somebody said that, yes, that's true.
Because that would explain why I don't really know it, if that is the case.
It is. It was released on the C64 as well, but that was actually a year after, in 1991.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, at least according to Moby Games.
Interesting. Is it good then?
I can't remember, mate. I know I've seen this before and I've played it, but I can't remember anything about it. I'm just looking at screenshots and no, I can't remember.
Yeah. And then we can only apologize to people, can we? If this is your favorite game of all time, obviously we can't have played everything. Yeah. It's just not one that I'm familiar with at all.
No.
Yeah.
I like the look of it on the Amiga. It's really beautiful, and it has that classic Amiga look, I think.
I've just Wikipedia here, and interesting, the guy who the guy who designed it was a prominent demo scener. He was in groups such as Boys Without Brains, which is interesting, isn't it? Because those games tend to be very stylish, and technically very good, but occasionally, you know, perhaps in, and certainly not in all cases, but quite often, you're not the best in terms of gameplay. I'm just looking at Charles Deanan actually arranged the Amiga version's music, so.
It looks a bit like a Wonderboy in Monsterland somehow, because it's a platformer. You run around in these big open worlds, it seems, and there are shops. You can buy extra equipment, and it looks really good, actually. I don't know why I've never played this.
Or maybe it's a bit of a wild card.
Okay, we've got two more games to cover. Leander. You ever play Leander, mate?
Yes, so I have played Leander. Now, I always get this mixed up with Lionheart. And I don't know why, because they are nothing like one another. And it's probably just the fact that they both begin with L. But I often get them confused. Now, this is interesting. So this is one that jumped out to me. I was looking down at Namco's list, and I was just doing a little bit of research, very brief research on all of them. Leander's the first game that was ever developed by Traveller's Tales.
Yeah.
Who obviously have gone on to huge success with the Lego
games,
the Lego tie-ins. But this is where it all started. It was published by Psygnosis. And it's another one of those Rastan style, more hacky and slashy, perhaps more with a bit of a more of a flavour of the likes of Turrican or Strider than that, but it is in that vein, isn't it, where there is, I think, it's more kind of combat heavy than jumping from platform to platform.
Yeah, that's how I remember it as well,
and I did play it back in the day, and I remember playing it quite a bit, but I don't remember ever finishing it, and I finished so few games back in the day that I think if I had, I would certainly remember it. 1991 release, so you know, right smack bang in what would have been my Amiga days.
Yeah,
and it's certainly one, and especially now that I've seen the link that it was the first ever. You know what I'm like with the first of stuff. it massively appeals to my OCD that it is the first game that they've ever developed, and for no other reason, that's what intrigues me most. Did you play it?
I played it back in the day. I remember playing it, but I've never finished it, and I don't think I've spent much time with it. It's one of those. It's not a jump and run, really. It's a walk and hack and slash instead, right?
That's what I certainly remember of it. Yeah.
So and they were normally not my style, so maybe that's why I haven't played it. But it does look really beautiful, and I'd love to play this one as well.
I'm just looking at some stills, actually. You know, it's even got, you know, that animation, that graphical effect on Strider when he does his whip and you get that, you get that blurring effect. It's even got that very same effect on the graphics. So it looks like a more deliberate platform.
If you want your Strider, we should have added Assassin here.
Well, that was one of the things that I noticed that wasn't on the list.
Yeah. I loved that back in the day.
Yeah. Great game. Yeah.
Okay, final game is another one from Namco's. It's Sleepwalker.
Yes.
So Sleepwalker, I remember reading about this forever. I mean, all of the magazines seem to want to have in-development articles about Sleepwalker. It was developed by CTA Developments and released in 1993 and published by Ocean, of course. It's one of those games that I wanted to love just because I've read all those magazine, not reviews, but the previews, I guess, and I'm waiting for it to come out. And then it came out, I'm guessing, late 93, because I don't think I ever got it for my Amiga back in the day. It was released for DOS later on, wasn't it? I'm sure that's where I finally played it at some point. But after that, I've played it more recently on the Amiga, it's like Soccer Kid. It's hard because you are, it's a platform where you're not really controlling only yourself. There's, you're a dog and you're running around on the platforms trying to get your owner, a little boy, little blonde haired boy who's sleepwalking, trying to get him safely through the levels. And you do that by kicking him in the back, and that means he jumps. And maybe you can push him to stop him as well, or maybe make him turn around.
You can hold him back, can't you, and stop him from walking. And can't you lie yourself down so that he's got, like, to form a bridge for him to walk over?
Yeah, that sounds right. So it's very much a puzzle platformer. You need to... You'll die many times in each level, and then you need to figure out what's the safe way to get through this level. But at the same time, as it's a puzzle platformer, it's very timing heavy. You need to do stuff at the exact right time. And that means this is a good game for the game club, because that's going to take some time. I mean, working out how to get through these. This is definitely a game that needs, that rewards patience. You need to be meticulous and do it just the right way.
Yeah. I'm almost exactly the same as you. I mean, the magazines went absolutely crazy for this game.
Yeah.
And I can only think that it was at a time when the Amiga was, you know, what was reaching the end, certainly of its commercial life. And the magazines were sensing that, you know, and there was a lot of stuff in the magazines at that time about, you know, please stop pirating because it's killing the platform. And remember, there was a lot of those plaintive articles, wasn't there, of people, please go and buy games because if you don't, we're going to stop making them. And because it had the tie-in with Comic Relief here in the UK as well, it's got a lot of attention. And it does look absolutely beautiful, really does. It is a really good looking game. The animation is really, really nice. Like you though, I just couldn't, when I got it, I just didn't really like it. Or whether I expected it to be something different and it wasn't, I don't really know. I remember just being disappointed by it and not really getting into it. And I played it a few times and you know, probably like, you know, we all were back in the day. Yeah, we didn't really value a lot of times what we had because someone would just turn up with a bag of discs and there you go, have a look at those. I don't know. But I would definitely, when I look at it now and I see puzzle platformer and I see how it's described and I think back to what I played, I definitely think now I would enjoy it, but I just didn't really enjoy it back in the day.
Yeah. I'm thinking the exact same thing. Now would be a perfect time for me to pick this up. Back in the day, there was too many other games I could play, so.
Yeah.
This definitely had an AGA release, I'm sure, an A1200.
Yeah, I think it definitely had the CD32 release, didn't it?
It did, but it was using the AGA graphics as well, the graphics mode.
Yeah, so. Of course, Yeah. It's a good
and
list.
That's it, mate. A long list and a good list. So let's start whittling it down.
Go on, then. So remind me, Tearaway Thomas, PP Hammer, and what we've got on our screens in front of us are the options. Go on then, you go first.
Okay, I'll go first. So, dear listeners, we will pick games that we don't want to be on the list. That's not because we don't want to play them, of course. We love all of your suggestions here, but we need to get this down to a list of, should we say three or four this time?
Yeah, let's do that. Let's do four, two each.
A list of four, yeah. Okay, let's see. This is a tough one. I think Top Hat Willy, I'm going to eliminate simply because I want to play one of those classic Amiga, those 16-bit graphics, Euro platformers. And as we talked about, this looks a bit too much like an 8-bit game. And even though it looks interesting, I'm sorry, Morpin, that has to go. Top Hat Willy.
Yeah. Okay, that's fair. Okay, so I'm going to, this just really out of pure ignorance, if nothing else, and apologies for anyone who loves this game, but yeah, Flimbo's Quest hasn't really done it for me. It would be the one that we said the least about. Yeah, I'll probably go off now and check it out just to see what I'm missing out on, but yeah, don't know. Just feels on this list, one that feels dispensable.
Okay, fair enough.
So I'm going to eliminate Flimbo's Quest.
So, this is weird because we've got a long list and I'm already having trouble picking something that I don't want to play. got some great games here. And I love the Amiga. Damn. It's already become a case of picking... picking good games off. I'm going to go with your PP Hammer, mate, because you practically picked it off yourself, being more of a puzzler than a platformer. And I want some of those classic platformers, so I'm going to eliminate your game, Chris. I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. And for much the same reason, I'm going to eliminate Sleepwalker, because that actually... is it really a platformer or is it a puzzle game? Every game's a puzzle game, of course. This feels more puzzle than platformer to me.
But there is a lot of platforming and being quick and having quick reactions there. Okay, yeah. It's fair enough. I'd like to play Sleepwalker at some point.
Yeah, me too.
Eliminate it. Let's see. What have we got
left? Maybe we should have a theme of comic relief tie-in games, and the only game we'd have on there is Sleepwalker.
Yeah, nice. Okay, it's getting tough now. I am going to eliminate... Oh, man. This is really tough. I'm actually going to eliminate something that I think looks really interesting simply... Wow. Yeah, simply because if I do recall correctly, I didn't really enjoy the speed at which you controlled this samurai. So First Samurai, I'm sorry, Riz.
Yeah.
I'm going to eliminate that, and I might be misremembering it completely because I haven't picked it up in many, many years. But yeah, First Samurai has got to go.
Okay. So this is my last one that feels like obvious in my mind.
Okay.
I'm going to struggle after this one, but I'm going to get rid of Traps and Treasures. Again, out of ignorance more than anything, I am also a little bit scared about the fact that it's only got 4 levels. Okay. I'm either thinking it's either going to be Rick Dangerous hard, or it's just going to be really short, or maybe it's both.
Nothing bad. So don't say anything bad about Rick Dangerous. That's the perfect game, you know.
Yeah, but I don't want to spend a month playing Rick Dangerous, mate. I'll go crazy.
Tearaway Thomas, McDonald Land, Harlequin, Soccer Kit, Fire and Ice, Lionheart, Rough and Tumble, and Leanderlift. Okay, I'm going to pick something that may make me very unpopular here, but of this list, I will have to eliminate Rough and Tumble. It's probably technically the best game on the list, I'm sure. But I don't remember enjoying playing it. So I'm going to eliminate that for purely selfish reasons.
Rough and Tumble. I thought that one would definitely make the last 4.
But it didn't.
Surprising. Mads in elimination. Shocker.
Yep.
Getting rid of Rough and Tumble. Okay, I'm going to go with one, which maybe not be quite as controversial as that one, but I just don't fancy Harlequin. I don't know. I just don't fancy it, I think. This is starting to get tough, but I know Paul Driscoll, Paul Monahan are good judges of games, and I very much respect their opinions, but I just don't fancy it. It looks like an acid trip. I don't fancy one of those.
Okay, so we are down to Tearaway Thomas, McDonald Land, Saga Kid, Fire and Ice, Lionheart, and Leander. And just to kick things up a bit, I'm going to reverse it now, mate. Now you get to pick one to stay on the list.
That's harsh. Okay, so are you going to go first then?
I think because I'm changing the rules, you get to go first.
When Mads is in charge, he just makes things up as he goes along.
Yes.
All right, then. Okay, want to stay on the list, right?
Yes.
Leander,
okay. That's a surprise. Yes.
Okay. I like the look of it. I think it looks really good, and it does have those Strider vibes. Mm. And I'm just fascinated by the fact it's where Traveller's Tale started. So there we go.
Yeah, good choice. But I'm afraid it's a bit too much of the because it's the first game. Let's see.
You know I love that stuff.
So I'm going to pick a game that maybe isn't the best game, but I'm really intrigued by the mechanic. So Soccer Kid. That's a game I would love to play. Because, I'm thinking there's a good game there if we really learn how to control it. And by the way, if I don't recall wrong, it's The Saga Kit was actually released for lots of platforms. Yeah, we talked about that. So we could try the, I mean, it would still be the Amiga if we play the Amiga CD32 game, if that's better to control, because there won't be up to jump because you've got four buttons.
Yeah. Okay. That's a good choice. That would have been my second one. So good choice.
Hmm? Are you about to say something, Chris?
No, mate. Go for it.
You just look like that.
You're going to tell me to pick a second game, aren't you?
Oh, you have to pick Tearaway Thomas now. I'm going to cry.
Just remind me what we got left. Tearaway Thomas, McDonald Land,
Fire and Ice, and Lionheart. So we already picked Soccer Kid and Leander. I am going to go, and this is...
It's my pick.
Is it your pick? Damn, it's your pick. Damn it. Yes, come on. Go ahead, Chris.
Stop.
Go ahead.
Stop. Because I'm going to give you a really difficult choice.
Yeah.
Right, so I was on the verge of picking Fire and Ice, but I did play that a lot back in the day. So it's one that I'd be very familiar with, but I'd like to go on a voyage of discovery here next month. And I'm going to pick McDonald Land.
McDonald Land, okay.
Yeah, I'm going to put McDonald Land on the shortlist.
Okay. So you put me on the spot here because... I really want to play Tearaway Thomas, but I feel bad picking my own game. So
I'll go for it. Go for
let's
it, mate.
See. We've got Tearaway Thomas, Fire and Ice, and Lionheart. So I'm going to play the elimination game with the last three. Of these three, the one I'd least like to spend an entire month with is Lionheart. Yeah, simply because it's just not as fun and colorful and controllable as the two others. Fire and Ice is one of those I really wanted to love back in the day, but I don't recall it being as good as the Revue's set it was. Mm-hmm. Whereas Tearaway Thomas actually was a great game.
Tough choices.
But I like the idea of picking. Let's see, Tearaway Thomas is a game you don't even know, and maybe others haven't played it as well. Whereas Fire and Ice. Most people will have played this to death. I'm going to go with my own game.
Good
I'm
going
to eliminate Fire and Ice. So we've got Tearaway Thomas left. Sorry to be so self-centered, but I want that game to be there.
I'm pleased with that decision. Yeah, as much as I love Fire and Ice, it's a great game. And I'm sure everyone's played Fire and Ice. It's a Stone Cold classic. Tearaway Thomas, maybe everyone's played that as well, but I haven't. It's one that I would be pleased if it won.
Yep. Tearaway Thomas is a game that many people, when I talk to them about the Amiga, they've never heard of for some reason, but it's a great game.
It's a strong shortlist.
It is indeed, mate. We've got Tearaway Thomas, McDonald Land or MC Kits, and Soccer Kit and Leander left.
Oh, it's nice. And you know what? It feels like they're all a bit different as well. That there's something...
Yes.
Yeah, there's something unique about all of them as well.
So... Tearaway Thomas, fast-paced, Sonic-like game, but with tiny levels, so it's only like I said, 15, 30, maybe 45 seconds to get through a level, and it's on a timer, so you're just racing through. Soccer Kit with that unique mechanic of having to control the ball, which is probably going to be infuriating, but I'd love to try to learn how to master that. Leander, which is more of a slow-paced hack and slash, which can be really good as well.
Probably the real traditional Euro platformer. Like, you know what I mean? Like what I would say was an Amiga platformer. I would say.
And McDonald Land, which was... McDonald Land, remind me again, what did that do?
So that was just a wacky license, isn't it, really? But probably a bit more traditional in the way it's structured with different worlds and... Mm. You know, with a focal point at the end of every world. But what's unique about McDonald Land is just the fact that it's apparently a much better game than it really deserves to be, given the license.
Okay.
So that's what really makes that one interesting for me.
Okay. But yes, maybe it was first and foremost an NES game, as MC Kids.
That's the only drawback with it.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
To be fair, it is a port. But I think there's enough interest in about that. And a lot of people do remember it as an Amiga game. It only got released in Europe, by the way, as well, which is interesting. So our North American listeners, whilst they probably are aware of it now, but wouldn't have been able to buy it commercially back in the day.
No, they would only be playing the NES version.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, great. We've got our list, mate. Tearaway Thomas, McDonald Land, Soccer Kid, and Leander. We'll post that soon on the Twitter and Discord forums so people can start voting.
Yeah, we'll give it. We'll let it germinate for 24 hours or so after this episode goes out, and then we'll get the poll up and
yes.
Let people have a crack at it.
Yeah, indeed. So we forgot to do one thing, one very important thing that you guys forgot to do on the 90s episode as well. What did we forget, Chris?
Thank our wonderful patrons.
Yes, thank you, all of you wonderful people. Thank you, wonderful patrons.
We did say that. We didn't.
You did,
we didn't
but you didn't mention their names. So now I'm gonna test you here. See how many you can do without looking at a list. Come on.
Blimey. Well, I'm already looking at a list, so I can't do that. I'm looking at an old list.
Yes. Yeah. So maybe we should just again say thank you to everyone. Thanks a lot for contributing, because it means a lot for us. And it not only does it show us that you actually enjoy that we do this stuff and spend our time doing it, but also it keeps the lights on, because bandwidth and hosting is actually not cheap these days. So it's really nice to get a bit of dash for that. That's wonderful. And we will mention all of your names again on the next episode, because we need to get Dean to give us an updated list, because he's the only one who can log into Patreon.
And if you're not in Discord, come and join in, because this is where all the fun happens. It's as vibrant as ever. And obviously this is where you can contribute to things like what we've done over the past few days with getting game ideas for the theme. So if you're not in Discord, I know it's probably unlikely. I suspect most people who listen are with us on Discord. But if you're not, do come and join us. The link is on the website, retroasylum.com. You can get in touch with either of us on Twitter or any of the hosts on Twitter or the Retro Asylum Twitter handle, and we'll tell you how to join. It's a cool place to be.
It is. And with those words, that's it for tonight, mate. Any shout-outs you'd like to get off your chest?
Just hello to the guys. Dean has been peppering me. I've told him we're doing this, and he's saying, who can I put on the cover? He's just sent me a beautiful cover, but with Zool on the front. So he's going to have to keep that
just for fun.
He's going to have to keep that in his archive for another day, I think. But it is one of his nice ones. They're all nice, of course. So hello to the guys. Hello to Andy and Jim. Big shout out to the Discord members. And apart from that, mate, I'm good.
Yes. Well, I'll echo those shout outs. Hello to the guys, and hello to all of the beautiful people at Discord. It's a great place to be. So active these days that I can't actually find time to follow all of the chatter myself, but I always love it when I do find time to read messages in there.
And we'll be back, mate, to talk about Sigil, the City of Cages.
Yes.
And I've got one question for you. How did you change the nature of a man?
Unlike your parents were, you are the secret force of Retro Asylum.
Playing so fast, they're the only ones who can take you back in time. They play old games, they're more retro than J1 Optimus Prime. At home or the arcade for adventures in